Welcome to the Border Breakdown, where we aim to make information on immigration reform more accessible. My name is Olivia Van Wagenen.
And my name is Daniel Welser, and we are both students at the University of Colorado at Boulder, studying economics and political science.
Today we're going to be talking about border policy, and more specifically, how the second Trump administration differs from the previous administrations, and what it means for immigrants and citizens alike. Let's begin with the history of all of this. Okay, let's talk a little bit more about the history of immigration reform. Daniel, I don't really know a lot pre-Clinton administration. Could you fill us in and get us up to speed?
Yeah, of course. Basically, some of the first laws that were passed on immigration were the Alien Sedition Acts of 1798. This is like basically right after America and the Constitution was ratified by about 10 years. And this essentially granted Congress and the executive the right to deport people in the event of emergencies, usually wartime measures, but as is being seen now, less so, just kind of general emergency powers. And then skipping pretty far ahead in the future, we get the foundation of the modern immigration system, which is the Hart-Celler Act of 1965. It largely eliminated the quota system, which we had for most of our history, and established a system that was largely meant for family reunification and also uncapped immigration quotas from countries that previously had them, such as China or Eastern Europe and South America. And then moving on from that, we have a lot of the amendments in the 1970s which actually raised the quotas of immigrants and visas that you could give out so more people could immigrate. And then in the 1980s, we see a shift towards what the modern immigration policy is, where we had Ronald Reagan granting amnesty, but as a result, he essentially heightened border security and gave the president a lot more authority with the Immigration Act of 1986, or the Immigration Reform and Control Act of 1986. Moving past the Reagan admin, there was the Immigration Act of 1990, which established the H-1B visa system and also established the visa lottery for those unable to get in through preference systems. Then the Clinton admin passed the Immigration Reform and Immigrant Responsibility Act of 1996, which furthered federal authority to enforce immigration restrictions and also increased funding of border security.
So this effectively started prevention through deterrence, which was reducing illegal immigration by making it harder and more dangerous to get into the country illegally. This often forced immigrants to walk through dangerous and remote parts of the border. And as of November 2021, Humane Borders, a local organization, has counted nearly 4,000 people whose remains have been recovered after dying trying to cross the vast stretch of land. Many more have died and yet to be found.
Then, after this was set up, and this is still very much in place today, the Bush admin greatly expanded the federal government's authority over the border, largely under the guise of anti-terrorism. After 9/11, the Department of Homeland Security was formed, and upon it being formed through the Homeland Security Act, they then passed Visa Entry Reform Acts, which made it harder to get visas, and also all of these acts greatly expanded the budget and staff for all resources of border control. And then in 2003, ICE was founded and was put under the purview of the Department of Homeland Security. And then lastly, in 2006, the Secure Fence Act stated that the Secretary of Homeland Security needed to act quickly to establish operational control over U.S. international land and maritime borders. And it also included expanding existing walls, fences, and surveillance of the border.
Following the Bush administration, Obama enacted DACA in 2012, which provided protections to unauthorized immigrants that had come to the U.S. as children as long as they arrived after June 15, 2007. Despite DACA, deportation picked up under Obama and more resources were granted to border control. This takes us to Trump's first term, where he instituted the family separation policy at the border, having undocumented people sent back without their children. The Trump administration's immigration deterrence policy, which led to the separation of over 4,000 children from their parents, and it has been denounced worldwide as a violation of basic human rights. He also increased the authority of the DHS to deport with measures such as Title 42, which allowed the swift expulsion of asylum seekers at the border, as well as the Muslim travel ban, which restricted immigration from majority Muslim countries. In 2019, he also expanded what should be considered for immigration into the United States. He also had a remain in Mexico policy for asylum seekers, forcing asylum seekers to stay in Mexico instead of allowing them to stay in the United States.
That brings us to the Biden admin, which has more progressive policies on immigration at the border. However, some things of note are that he kept Title 42 in place, citing the COVID-19 pandemic. However, he let it expire in 2023. He also ended the family separation policy at the border and attempted to reunite many of the families. He ended the Remain in Mexico policy and increased the use of parole so that that way they could let people in even if they couldn't obtain a visa. And although the Biden admin also issued executive orders directing the Department of Justice to phase out its contracts with private prison companies, it excluded ICE detention from the order. And since then, the number of immigrants detained by ICE and revenues for private prison companies have only increased. It should also be noted that he tried to pass numerous immigration laws, and the most important one he tried to pass and Trump ended up signing was the Lincoln-Riley Act, which gave the states more power to sue the federal government for failed immigration policy, and it also made it easier to detain
undocumented immigrants
that committed a crime.
So before we get into the current administration and what that's looking like, I wanted to touch on how one could become a citizen legally in the United States. So there are a couple requirements to be a citizen. The first is you need to obtain permanent residence. You have to live in the United States for 5 years, 3 if married to an American citizen already. You also have to be of the minimum required age, which is typically at least 18. You have to be continuously and physically live in the United States as a green card holder for a certain number of years, depending on your situation. You have to establish residency in the state or U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services district where you intend to apply. You also have to have a quote-unquote good moral character. You have to be proficient in basic spoken and written English and demonstrate knowledge of U.S. history and government. You also have to register for the military service if you are a man of a certain age, aka 18 years old, and be willing to perform civil service when required. You also have to swear allegiance to the United States and fill out an N-400 form, which is an application for naturalization.
It should also be noted that this is just the requirements to become a citizen. Every individual visa has its own requirements in order to apply just to be in the country. For instance, there are immigrant and non-immigrant visas, and as mentioned earlier, a lot of the immigrant visas have to do with having family in the United States, whereas a lot of the non-immigrant ones are things such as student visas and work visas. And the requirements for these vary. For student visas, you have to like submit transcripts. For all of them, you need passport photo of yourself according to specific guidelines, which the Border Control and Immigration Services puts out. All of them have a fee, with I think the most I saw being around $200 and most of them being around $185. They need proof of citizenship in another country, and in general it is a lot of paperwork to simply get a visa. And then not only that, there are often waiting lists, with some being up to 36 months of having to wait to get a visa.
So now that we know a little bit more about the history and the requirements, we can go back to how the current administration is different. The most notable thing is that Trump instituted the Alien Enemies Act of 1798. This is a wartime authority that allows the president to detain or deport the natives and citizens of an enemy nation. This law permits the president to target these immigrants without a hearing and based only on their country of birth or citizenship. Although the law was enacted to prevent foreign sabotage in wartime, it can be and has been wielded against immigrants who have done nothing wrong, have evidenced no signs of disloyalty, and are lawfully present in the United States. It is an overbroad authority that may violate constitutional rights in wartime and is subject to abuse in peacetime. The last time this act was used was against Japanese Americans during World War II, in a rather shameful part of U.S. history, when they were placed in internment camps. Mass deportations of both undocumented and legal immigrants, often without a hearing, is happening today, not just in World War II times. Trump had made it very clear he is willing to act without approval from Congress through executive orders.
I think it should also be noted that on top of largely eroding due process rights for immigrants, he has also made it harder to obtain visas or residency, usually by increasing the requirements or prerequisites that you need in order to apply for certain visas. He's also cracked down hard on sanctuary cities, which are states that I believe provide protection for undocumented immigrants. And he's done this by cutting funding and also expanding ICE's authority and using that expanded authority to intensify raids in what are supposed to be safe places. It should also be noted that without due process, using the Alien Enemies Act, he's been deporting many supposedly violent criminals to El Salvador, usually without a hearing, and on top of this has also been cracking down on a lot of pro-Palestinian immigrants by often deporting them for, say, writing an op-ed that's in favor of Palestine or for attending a protest that's in favor of Palestine.
I think that's really interesting to note as well, because it is deporting people for exercising their First Amendment rights, which is pretty spooky. Additionally, the Trump administration is rapidly expanding immigration detention through billion-dollar contracts with private prison companies. Dozens of facilities may reopen across at least 8 states, including places with long histories of abuse. But while some communities and states are concerned about oversight and pushing back, others see it as an economic opportunity.
I think something else that's important to note on top of expanding private prisons and all of this is he's also attempted to end birthright citizenship, which has been enshrined in the Constitution since the 1860s.
So moving on to how the Latinx community is affected, increased security and militarization of the border contributes to the idea of criminalization and otherization of Latino people. Latinos will be disproportionately affected by mass deportations as well, especially since many of them face more severe punishments than their white immigrant counterpart for the same crimes. Making English the official language has also left government sites that specialize in working with Spanish speakers underfunded, creating communication issues. Restricting travel along the U.S.-Mexico border also disrupts family ties between Latino communities. Besides this, many Latino families are concerned that members of their family may be deported, causing stress in the community. This, paired with intensified ICE raids in public places, is causing problems with education, work, and public life.
While the Latino community is taking the brunt of a lot of Trump's anti-immigration rhetoric, I think it's very important to also point out that basically all U.S. citizens can or are already being affected by his immigration policies. For instance, the Trump admin has floated the idea of potentially sending U.S. citizens to prisons in El Salvador. This, paired with the lack of concern for due process rights for non-citizens or U.S. immigrants, could lead to Americans being deported to a foreign nation with or without a trial. It should also be noted that the deportations of
legal immigrants over exercising their freedom of speech also points to potential political repression using the U.S. Border Patrol force.
Additionally, many U.S. citizens have already been detained and even deported because they were mistaken for an undocumented immigrant by patrols on reentry into the United States. This is causing travel fears and fears of interactions with border security with or without proof of citizenship.
As we're getting to the end of this episode, we wanted to leave our listeners with a few important takeaways. The first is that the current administration differs heavily from what has come before it in a number of ways, including ignoring constitutionally protected freedom of speech and due process rights, as well as the intensity of raids and the intensity of authoritative action against immigrants.
It's important to remember the erosion of the rights of immigrants makes it much easier to erode the rights of citizens. Despite this, it is important to remember that you have power and we are stronger together. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere.